The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on August 9, 1987 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. The class was given on the occasion of Lord Balaram's appearance day and begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 10, Text 18, and continues with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 6, Text 76.
Intersections, a festival site, rerouted all traffic and set up a stage and sound system. Thousands would gather nightly. The crowd was sometimes so large and excited that Prabhupada would have difficulty speaking above the noise, so he would hold the kirtan. In the quiet that followed, he would have one or two of his disciples speak. Then he would speak. If the audience again became noisy, he would again say, "All right, let us have kirtana." Or sometimes he would simply sit and distribute bits of crystallized sugar candy to the thousands who approached him to touch his lotus feet and take a piece of prasadam. Giriraja! Quote, all the area around his block was completely packed with people. They were all mad after Srila Prabhupada and Krishna consciousness. Although a very big area, still people were occupying every space available, perching on rooftops, looking out windows, sitting on odd cement boulders, or blocks scattered here and there. Everything about Prabhupada's program was completely satisfying to everyone. The old people liked it because there was the saintly figure of Srila Prabhupada with his young foreign disciples. And the intellectuals liked it because Srila Prabhupada was giving such sound philosophy. And the children liked it because they could run and dance and join in the kirtan. End of the quote. Madri Dasi, quote, at one program they mobbed us so, we couldn't even get out of the cars. They were so eager to see Srila Prabhupada. They were so many people. Prabhupada said, "All right, the next night will be a night for ladies only." So the next night only ladies came. But still, it was just as packed. And Prabhupada gave a wonderful lecture. End of quote. Bruce, quote, one program was so noisy that no one stopped talking. So Prabhupada just started chanting the Brahma Samhita. That was the whole program. He just chanted the Brahma Samhita. Then he gave up and went out. Chidananda quote, before going out to attend these programs, Prabhupada looked like a general getting ready to go out for battle. He would come out of his room, beautifully dressed and effulgent, ready to go out and fight Maya. There were thousands and thousands of people waiting. I didn't know what to make of it. I couldn't handle so many people. But Prabhupada was waging war on Maya. He was there to convince all these people. And the more people would come, the stronger he would get. Prabhupada preached in the outlying villages also. He would ride in a car with Mr. Jariwala, several disciples, and his Radha Krishna deities to Pardoli or Mayo. The village dwellings were made of baked mud with straw woods and cow dung walls and floors. So Prabhupada's visit the villages through drew rice flower designs on the ground outside their houses and lined their lanes with clay pots, plantain leaves, and coconuts. Mr. N.D. Patel, quote, the people in my village were very much impressed by the presence of Prabhupada. They used to say that he has done miracles by chanting. He is a miracle saint, no doubt, people were saying. So many Western people have become devotees just by chanting the name of the Lord. The people were very much impressed by Prabhupada's practical way of bhakti. In his lecture, Srila Prabhupada ji created such a good impression, not only on Vaishnavas, but so many Christians, Parsis, Even some Muhammadan friends started believing in Lord Krishna as the universal Godhead. With regards to all the saints, nobody has been able to spread this philosophy like this in the past. In our village, we are already Vaishnavas, of course, but we used to believe in Suryaji, Durga, Thakuraji, and all these things. But after Prabhupada's explanation of what is Gita, what is Lord Krishna, we are chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. After Prabhupada conducted his discourse here in the village, the people were so impressed that even in his absence they chant the Maha Mantra loudly, and they greet people with the words, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. At the time of departure, the people wished every devotee in Prabhupada with the words, Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottama. Saraswatim Vyasa. Tato Jaya Mudiyajet. Mukata Sthalu Nirbhinnam. Jivhata Tropajayate. Tato Nana Raso Jange. Jivaya Yodigamyate. From the mouth, the palate became manifested, and thereupon the tongue was also generated. After this, all the different tastes came into existence so that the tongue can relish them. Translation of the petition.
From the mouth,
the palate became manifested.
Thereupon
the tongue.
Was also generated.
After this,
all the different tastes
came into existence, so that the tongue can relish them. Report by Srila Prabhupada. This gradual process of evolution suggests the explanation of the controlling deities, Adi Daiva, because Varuna is the controlling deity for all relishable juices. Therefore, the mouth becomes the resting place for the tongue, which tastes all the different juices, of which the controlling deity is Varuna. This suggests, therefore, that Varuna was also generated along with the development of the tongue and the palate, being instrumental adibhuta, or forms of matter. But the functioning deity who is a living entity is Adidaiva, whereas the person undergoing the function is Adhyatma. Thus the three categories are also explained as to their birth after the opening of the mouth of the Virat Purusha. The main principle, namely the Adhyatma, Adidaiva and Adibhutam, as explained there. Thus end the Bhakti Vedanta Swami purport and translation, text 18. Chapter 10, Canto 2, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the matter of the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. In the material creation, the things come from the subtle and they go to the gross. That's how the original creation is performed. The Lord desires something, he manifests some sense, from there a subtle quality comes, taste, sound. In this way, the Lord is the original cause of everything, the demigods, the living entities, and the senses and the sense objects. Everything is provided by Krishna. This is his transcendental opulence, that he is simultaneously remaining there, the Mahavishnu, at the same time he is generating, manifesting the entire material universe without moving a hand. He can do it all laying down. See, if we want to do something, we have to make so many endeavors to do it.
Sri Krishna, he simply desires and everything is happening.
The Upanishads and the Puranas repeatedly mention this three statuses, adhyatmic, adhibhautik, and adhidaivik. Here in this section of the Bhagavatam, very nice explanation from different points of view, different applications of adhyatmic, adhibhautik, and adhidaivik are being given. Now, in other places, Srila Prabhupada would use this example for the sufferings of material life. When a person is adhyatmic, it means that he's practicing Krishna consciousness outside of the direct association of the devotees. Prabhupada used examples of adhyatmic, that we suffer the pains of the body and mind, our own pains coming in the body and mind. Adhibhautik is the suffering coming from other living entities, and adhidaivik are those sufferings which are coming beyond our control due to natural causes. These examples have been given many, many times in different parts of the Shastra. Here we have another application, where adhyatmik is the soul. Adhidaivik are the demigods who control, and adhibhautik is the body which is encasing the soul. So, these different concepts of adhyatmik, adhibhautik, and adhidaivik have different applications in different parts of the Vedas. In this regard here, the adhyatmik, adhibhautik, and adhidaivik, which are being discussed in relation to the creation and evolution, they are giving the second indication. The purpose of human life is meant to understand what is the self, adhyatmik. Ultimately, it's meant to understand the Supreme Self. The Supreme Self is not different from the individual self. This was explained, achintya veda veda tattva, that the Lord, He being the complete whole, His parts are also part of Him. So they have the similar quality, or the same qualities in a minute proportion. So in this way, the living entity never can become Krishna, but the living entity can realize himself as well as the Supreme Self. When one has this realization at that time, then one's suffering ends, and one is situated in what is known as a liberated state. Krishna has senses, as revealed here in the Bhagavatam. He can perceive things. He can see, taste, feel. He can do everything we can do, but much more. His senses are sakala, indriya, vritti, manti. One sense can do the job of the other sense. He can taste with his hand. He can see with his feet. Any sense can do the activity of any other. He's not limited in any way by the fact that he's expanding senses. To the living entities. It's all coming due to his desire. Now, Krishna, his spiritual body, therefore, is directly able to function and have perception. But being conditioned souls, we are given a material body, and the material body is outfitted in such a way that it can also perform similar functions. That is a wonderful thing. We can perform similar functions. These are all a reflection of the Supreme Lord. Very proud and foolish religion is, and people, they consider that we, or human beings, are the top, and that what we can do, we can see, we can feel, we can smell, that Krishna or God, the Supreme Lord, cannot do. If He can't do something we can do, then how is He supreme? If He's supreme, He must be able to do everything we can do plus more. It makes a simple sense. The Supreme has to be able to do anything that anyone else can do. Now, if we relate that the Supreme cannot do these things, that isn't in fact reducing Him lower than we are. As you read this morning in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that
Lord Chaitanya, he was spreading the Sankirtan chanting, going from place to place. On his way back from Vrindavan, he felt ecstatic, and then there were a group of soldiers, Pathans, who saw him unconscious with his associates. And they thought that his associates had killed him by feeding him some Datura poison, like Belladonna poison, and killed him, and now they're taking his money. But by chanting Hare Krishna, they brought him back to consciousness. And then he was preaching to them from the Quran, how even in the Quran it mentions that the Lord has a form, and that form is actually the supreme understanding. In the Vedas, there are many philosophers who come to the conclusion that the Supreme Lord is impersonal. They say, since we have form, God must have no form. It's very hard to convince such persons that what is the actual truth, because most of them have already got a preconceived idea, and they're not so open to listen or to change. This is very unfortunate. If such persons do get the association of devotees and do engage in devotional service, it is possible that eventually they can change. Just as the Jnana Yogis, or Advaitavadis, who consider in this way that the Lord is impersonal. Prabhupada explains that their understanding is simply like taking from night to day, just making the opposite. So it's a material logic. We have form in the day, we have form in the material world, so then spiritual world must have no form. That's their conclusion. Spiritual truth must be formless. But if the Supreme Truth was formless, someone give me the Adi Lila one. If the Supreme Lord was formless, then where did all the form come from? If the original Absolute Truth was simply formless, there was never any form in the Absolute Truth, then where does form come from? Why would a formless Absolute Truth manifest a world filled with form? If the Absolute Truth is simply an energy source, then how did everything with form come about? See, these questions remain unanswered because it's totally outside their purview. Now, modern science, they like the impersonal philosophy. They think it's more appropriate for their scientific quest. In fact, there are others who like impersonal philosophy. In Calcutta, the local head of the KGB, Russian embassy worker, who comes over and checks us out now and then, he was saying that when you're preaching your Krishna consciousness, why can't you preach like all the other missions? Ram, Krishna, this one, that. They're all preaching that God is nirakar, He has no form. We don't mind that in Russia. But why do you have to preach that He's a person, and He's the supreme autocrat, and He's the supreme authority, and everyone has to surrender to Him, and we have to serve Him, and then He's the owner of everything, and He gives everyone their quota? Why do you have to preach that? Why can't you just be like the Advaitavadis and preach that everything is nothing? We can accept that Adi one. See, actually, the whole world has been proliferated with this disease of impersonalism, with the idea that everything is coming from nothing. Sometimes when they speak, it's very confusing. How they say that, yes, everything is something, and something is nothing, nothing is everything, everything is nothing, nothing is nothing. You see? Now you've understood. And as I mentioned before, when people go to these classes and they have big talks about nothing, then after the talk, when you ask that, have you enjoyed the Jnana talk by Swamiji? They said, oh yes. Brilliant speaker, wonderful. So what has he said? They look at you. What has he said?
He said, great Swamiji, I'm an ordinary person, am I supposed to understand what he says? If I could understand what he says, what is the value of it? Of course I couldn't understand what he said. He's such a great speaker. It was completely over my head. Wonderful, wonderful. So, this is the illusion. The people, they want to think they're simply nothing, and now I can do whatever I want. I can enjoy my sense gratification, because absolute truth is nothing. It's just a impersonal. So that means that I am actually supreme in my own sphere, and there's no higher reality in a personal level. So finally, when they get frustrated, then they think about merging or annihilating, nihilistic. But otherwise, they simply think, what is the use of merging? I'll enjoy, because in the future there's just nothing. Actually, this impersonal philosophy encourages people to have more children or more sex life, because it doesn't give any alternative happiness. So people, they become more attached to the material happiness. The impersonal truth doesn't provide any attractive thing that will encourage one to reduce their sense gratification. So this is basically the problem. With the impersonal philosophy that it encourages people to take more shelter of the material world. So, Krishna comes down to dispel all these illusions. He comes in with his brother Balaram and his associates and may show the world his pastimes. He is a supreme person. He is Satchidananda. Rig Veda says, Om Krishna Vai Satchidananda Gana Krishnari Purusha Krishna Purushottamaha. He is eternal blissful knowledge. He is Purushottam, the supreme personality. This is the nature of the Lord. Because He is the person, therefore from Him He can manifest this world. The world is coming. It's not that we imagine God. That's what the atheists say. Oh, you just imagine God. Actually, in effect, Krishna is lying in yoga nidra and He's imagining the whole material world and it's manifesting. That's actually what's happening. So, by His desire, the material world is manifesting. We're having material bodies so that we can imitate or can emulate Krishna. Krishna is actually the supreme enjoyer. When we want to enjoy imitating Krishna, then He gives us these material bodies so we can also create our own little world. In Bengali, what they call when you enter Grihastha life, they say Samsar Jivan. I don't know on other parts of India if they say, but they say the Samsar Jivan. The life of Samsar. Samsar means, of course, a world. And household life means to create one samsar. So actually there, one is creating one own little world with the wife and the children and the house, one's domain. And head of the samsar is husband, wife is co-head helping. She's also making her world in relation with husband and children. And this way, samsar life, they're creating their own dynasty. Children, grandchildren, businesses, properties, cows, servants, etc., etc. As much as they're able. To whatever degree. You know, even up to being a king. So this is the samsari life. Actually, in that perspective, you can see how we're imitating Krishna, in a sense. Just as He creates the world, we're creating our own little world, our own little dominion. But the difference, of course, is Krishna is always satisfied. And when we do it, we find that there are a lot of problems come up. So the ultimate conclusion is that we are not God, although we have a little controlling propensity. Our natural position is actually to be a servitor of Krishna. Not only are we a servitor of Krishna, but everyone other than Krishna is a servitor of Krishna. including his first expansion, whom is Balarama. This is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, page 560, Adivida, text 76, chapter 6.
Aniraki katha baladeva mahasoi jarbhava sudha sakya basalya dhimoi.
Not to speak of others, even Lord Baladeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is full of emotions like pure friendship and eternal love. Purport. Although Lord Baladeva appeared before the birth of Lord Krishna and is therefore Krishna's worshipable elder brother, he used to act as Krishna's eternal servitor. In the spiritual sky, all the Vaikuntha planets are predominated by the quadruple expansions of Krishna, known as the Chatur Vyuha. They are direct expansions from Baladeva. It is the singularity of the Supreme Lord that everyone in the spiritual sky thinks himself a servitor of the Lord. According to social convention, one may be superior to Krishna, but factually everyone engages in his service. Therefore, in the spiritual sky or the material sky in all the different planets, no one is able to supersede Lord Krishna or demand service from him. On the contrary, everyone engages in the service of Lord Krishna. As such, the more a person engages in the service of the Lord, the more he is important. And conversely, the more one is bereft of the transcendental service of Krishna, the more he invites the bad fortune of material contamination. In the material world, although materialists want to become one with God or compete with God, everyone directly or indirectly engages in the service of the Lord. The more one is forgetful of the service of Krishna, the more he is considered to be dying. Therefore, one develops pure Krishna consciousness, he immediately develops his eternal servitorship to Krishna. So, this way, Lord Chaitanya also said, Akala Krishna Ishar Ar Sabha Britta. Balaram, he's being the older brother of Krishna. He serves Krishna like an older brother wanting to protect Krishna from anyone else. But also describes that Balaram is also the source of the service attitude.
Bhakta vimaramo si balarame sei bhavi anugato thara amsa gane.
The source of the sentiment of servitude is indeed Lord Balaram. The plenary expansions who follow him are all influenced by that ecstasy. So Balaram, he also has this mood of servitorship. He had different, at the same time, Balaram is considered the first expansion of Krishna. Prabhupada said basically there's no difference between Krishna and Balaram, except Krishna is sham color and Balaram is whitish.
Sarvavatari Krishna Swayam Bhagavan Tahara Dikiya Deho Si Balaram.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the fountainhead of all incarnations. Lord Balarama is his second body. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is the primeval Lord. The original form of Godhead in his first expansion is Sri Balaram. The Personality of Godhead can expand himself in innumerable forms. The forms that have unlimited potency are called Swamsa. The forms that have limited potencies, the living entities, are called Vibhinamsa. Regarding Krishna and Balaram, they are both one and the same identity. They differ only in form. He is the first bodily expansion of Krishna, and he assists Krishna in Lord Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Purport. Balaram is a swamsa expansion of the Lord, and therefore there is no difference in potency between Krishna and Balaram. The only difference is in their bodily structure. As the first expansion of Godhead, Balaram is the chief deity among the first quadruple forms, and he is the foremost assistant of Sri Krishna in his transcendental activities.
Se Krishna Navadipe Si Chaitanya Chandra Se Balarama Sangi Sri Nityananda.
The original Lord Krishna appeared in Navadvipa as Lord Chaitanya, and Balaram appeared with him as Lord Nityananda. Balaram has many intimate pastimes with the Lord. Here are some of the natures of Lord Balaram. Kabu guru kabu saka kabu britya lila purbe jano tina bhave bhaje koi lokela. Jai Jagannath Sri Bada Balaram ki. Sometimes Nityananda serves Lord Chaitanya as his guru, sometimes as his friend, and sometimes as his servant. Just as Lord Balaram played with Lord Krishna in these three different modes in Vraja. You see, sometimes Balaram was a guru of Krishna, sometimes his friend, and sometimes his servant. Sometimes Balaram would tell Krishna, do this, as a guru. Sometimes as a friend, sometimes as a servant.
Vishavaya Krishna Sane Mata Mati Ron Kabu Krishna Koretar Pada Sambahan.
Playing like a bull, Lord Balaram fights with Krishna head to head, and sometimes Lord Krishna massages the feet of Lord Balaram.
Aponake Britta Kori Krishna Prabhu Jani Krishna Kolara Kola Aponake Mane.
He considers himself a servant and knows Krishna to be his master. Thus he regards himself as a fragment of his plenary portion. This is a verse from the Bhagavatam.
Vishayamano nardanto yuyudhate parasparam anukritya rutaya jantums charatu prakritau yatha.
Acting just like ordinary boys, they played like roaring bulls as they fought each other, and they imitated the calls of various animals.
Kvachit kriya parisrantam gopotsam gopabarhanam swayam visrama yatyaryam padasam vahanadivi.
Sometimes when Lord Krishna's elder brother, Lord Balaram, felt tired after playing and lay his hand on the lap of a cowherd boy, Lord Krishna himself served him by massaging his feet.
Kegangva kuta ayata daivi va naryuta suri rayo mayastu me bhartur nanya me pivi mohini.
Who is this mystic power and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master Lord Krishna, for who else can bewilder me? The playful pastimes of the Lord caused suspicion in the mind of Lord Brahma, and therefore Lord Brahma, to test Krishna's lordship, stole all the Lord's cows and cowherd boys with his own mystic power. Sri Krishna responded, however, by replacing all the cows and boys in the field. Lord Balaram's thoughts of astonishment at such wonderful retaliation are recorded in this verse. In other words, when Lord Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys, then Krishna re-expanded himself as the calves and the cowherd boys. Then, one day, the calves got loose, and they went and drank all the cow's milk. And the cowherd men, they saw what's going on, they became angry, and they started running down the hill. But when they saw their sons, they became so filled with love, they started to embrace their sons and smell their head. And when the cows were seeing, the cows, normally the cow is more attached to eating the grass, but even the calf is sucking the milk. But here, the cows are licking their calf, and every cow has tears in the eyes. Balaram is seeing that normally this type of love the calves are having for Krishna, and the cowherd boys are having this kind of love for Krishna. Not even so much love they have for their own children, or their own, the cows don't have so much affection for their calves. So how is this? How is this going on? There's some type of yoga maya going here. So then he said, who is this mystic power? And where has she come from? What is causing all this play? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master Lord Krishna, for who else can bewilder me? No one can bewilder Balaram, not a demoness, nor the other potencies. Only one who can bewilder him even for a moment is Krishna. So then he could realize, aha, this is Krishna. Then another pastime is when the Kurus, the Kauravas, they went to flatter Baladev. And they spoke ill of Krishna, and they said, we're going to give you the, we'll give you the throne, we'll give you, just decide with us and fight against Krishna. So then, in response to them, Balaram said to them, Yasyang vipanka jarajo kila lokapala mayutamai vitamupasita tirta tirtam brahma bhavo hamapi asya kala kalaya sri sodvahima chiramasya nipasanamba. What is the value of a throne to Lord Krishna, the masters of the various planetary systems, except the dust of his lotus feet on their crowned heads? That dust makes the holy places sacred, and even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lakshmi, and I myself, who are all portions of his plenary portion, eternally carry that dust on our heads. Akale Iswar Krishna Arsa Britya Jare Koiche Nachayase Toiche Kore Nityo. Lord Krishna alone is the supreme controller, and all others are his servants. They dance as he makes them do so. So in this way, one can understand some of the different aspects of Lord Balaram. Prabhupada also mentions that sometimes there's a controversy. Does Hari Rama signify Rama or Balarama? Prabhupada says that in this connection we may mention in an incident that took place between two of our sannyasis while we were preaching the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Hyderabad. One of them said that Hari Rama refers to Sri Balaram, and the other protested that Hari Rama means Lord Rama. Ultimately the controversy came to me, and I gave a decision that if someone says that Rama in Hari Rama is Lord Ramachandra, and someone else says that the Rama in Hari Rama is Sri Balarama, both are correct because there is no difference between Sri Balarama and Lord Rama.
Krishna called Jogamaya in the spiritual world and told her to attract Balaram to the womb of Rohini in Vrindavan. And thereafter, he would take birth in a shelter in the womb of Devaki. And that then Yoga Maya should go in the womb of Yasoda. So then, Balaram was attracted. She already was in the womb of Devaki. She was attracted to the womb of Rohini. Then Krishna took shelter in the womb of Devaki, and Yogamaya took shelter in the womb of Yasoda. When Krishna was born in the prison of Kamsa, and then taken over to Nanda and Yasoda's house, and the baby girl was taken from Yasoda, Krishna was placed there. That baby girl, when Kamsa tried to kill, flew out of Kamsa's hand and revealed her form of Maya Devi. Balaram, appearing as the son of Rohini, who was a co-wife, from that angle of vision was also the brother of Krishna, half-brother. And from the aspect that he was also previously in the womb of Devaki, he's a direct brother of Krishna. In the material, in our external vision, of course, he's directly the primary first expansion of Krishna. It's another pastime of Lord Balaram. So today, Balaram appears some days before Krishna. Therefore, he's considered the older brother. So we respect and worship Lord Balaram. Balaram is also known as the original guru. And it's by the mercy of Balaram one can have the mercy of Krishna. Just as by the mercy of Guru one can have the mercy of Krishna. But therefore, we pay the Lord Balaram for his mercy, that we can develop spontaneous love for Lord Krishna. That we can also serve the spiritual master in the disciplic succession for the satisfaction of Krishna and Balaram. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? He went on visiting holy places. Because he didn't want to be involved. He knew what was going to happen. He was friendly with the Kurus. He trained Duryodhan how to fight with the club. But he knew that because Duryodhan was offending Krishna and the Pandavas, therefore he would be killed, everyone would be killed. So just to avoid the whole situation, he went on a Tirtha Brahman and came back after the whole battle was over. Since Krishna already promised that he wasn't going to fight, what was the need of being involved? Any other question? What more elaboration you want? Excuse me. She appeared, daughter of Yasoda. Vasudev took her back to the prison. When Kamsa came, he said, look, at eighth son is a girl, not a boy. He said, what is this? Even the demigods lie. He said, your eighth child would be a boy and he would kill me. And you're showing me a girl. So said, he was pleading, please spare her, don't kill her. Because she's a girl, you don't have to worry about her. But then Kamsa, he grabbed her and was trying to just smash her head against the floor, against a rock. She flew out of his hand, came in the sky in multi-handed Durga form. The external energy, Mahamaya is expansion of the Yogamaya. So she manifested her external form as the Mahamaya. Immediately Kamsa became very respectful. The demons are generally very respectful to Durga and Shiva. And she told them, you fool, that person who you want to kill, he's already gone somewhere else and he's already out of your control. Hare Krishna.